discover that sometimes quite by chance, right? But we do it anyway, because we've learned that the body experiences our consciousness. The body is an aspect, as we said, of our consciousness. It expresses it, an essential part of it. And yet the energy of consciousness is not perfectly diffused through every cell. It seems to collect in certain places, in certain circumstances, right? That's a common experience. Okay, so now we get into the chakra system. For some reason, we've never really pursued that very common insight and experience very far. Not in modern psychology, not in physiological psychology. We've gone off in another direction. Well, now we're going to pursue it today. What is the significance of this common experience of energy being more intense in different parts of the body in different states of consciousness, okay? And what are the implications? This is where we get into the chakras. There are several ways to discuss the chakras. First is the context of the occult. That you'll find in books of the chakras as the energy centers of the subtle bodies, and how these energy centers connect the subtle bodies and relay information between them. We're going to say some things about that. You can talk about the chakra system in another very different context. It's related, but it goes in a very different direction. You can talk about it in terms of a developmental archetypal psychology. So there you would talk not about how the chakras work as an anatomist, but our physiology. You talk about it as a psychologist, how the chakras have certain powers, how the chakras are centers of different kinds of consciousness, how different kinds of consciousness are associated with each of the chakras, and how as we grow, we move up these chakras, or we move along a certain developmental pathway from a very fear-related, trust-related issues to very cosmic-related kind of consciousness. That's a second way. Or you can talk about the chakras as simply body-mind centers, and there's some growing interest in that. I'm going to probably have all these three ways of talking about them interlaced in this conversation here. Again, our first observation is that different motives and emotions that we experience are experienced more intensely in different parts of the body. And one thing we can say about that, why is that? Why would that be? Well, one immediate answer would be, well, perhaps that would intensify or de-intensify the functioning of those parts of the body. Okay? That's one very obvious reason. So if you experience an energy and more in the throat, then maybe there are things happening in the throat at that time that aren't ordinarily happening in the throat. Maybe more energy is, more conscious energy is being brought to the throat center. Or when we feel the heart really responding, maybe there's more energy going there. Or when we feel the gut tightening, maybe there's more energy there, a certain kind of energy there. This is, of course, a purely psychophysiological observation about what's happening. We say different motives are experienced differently in different parts of the body. Then the next question would be, do our predominating motives change through the years as we grow? Granted, all through the day we have different motives for what we're doing, but it seems that as we grow through the years, our consciousness is more or less being governed by, at one stage in life by a kind of a motive, and at another stage in life by another kind of motive. And what do you think? Do you think our motive for living changes through the years? the motive of consciousness or its intention? I think it certainly does change through the years. So if our motive, the motive of consciousness changes as we grow through the years, then we can also assume that the way we experience our bodies will change through the years as well. Right? Okay. Let's look at one of your handouts then that says something about that. This would be the one, the yellow sheet of paper entitled Levels of Experience. And on this page you see a whole lot of things going on that page. Every now and then I try to put everything down on one sheet of paper. This is probably as close as I've ever gotten, is this particular sheet here. It shows on the right-hand side motive of attention, on the left-hand side the kind of ego we have, and in the middle of the page the kind of human powers that are being developed or that are at work. At the bottom you say everybody starts off as a kind of a physical kind of an ego that would pretty much characterize our identity in the very early years of life. And our motive of consciousness would be very much attuned to security. Is this world a safe place in which to live? We'd be developing our bodily functions. We'd be developing our sensory experiences, learning, really, what it's like to be in this world. Then there's an emotional level that has a very different kind of an ego structure that you would call mythical emotional ego. This particular kind of ego is an ego which is strongly identified with the group. My identity and the group's identity are inseparable. The motive of attention here is emotional experience, pleasure, sexuality, meaning sexual identity, especially what it means to be a boy or a girl, self-determination, personal power. Probably we've developed the powers of those first three motives probably by the age of 6 or 7 years of age. And we're beginning to work there out of the beginnings of a mental ego where we have a kind of a self-concept and we're making decisions about that. These numbers correspond to the chakras, okay? And this would be a way of speaking about the chakras in a developmental, as a developmental process. So we develop the powers, you would say, of the first three chakras by the age of 5 or 6. By the age of 7, we're beginning to operate out of the mental ego, not in any way fully distanced from the mythical emotional ego. Many people never get away from that. But we've begun to exercise some kind of responsibility for our own choices. We're making our own choices. That's the power of the fourth chakra, is self-responsibility. And the power of the fourth chakra is that now, through thought, I can direct my emotional energy. And this is the awakening of the mental ego. I'm not merely a creature of a culture. I am a self-determining creature. Okay? That's the power awakened in the fourth center. On the spiritual level, what we're asked to do is to develop that power in the context of compassion. But the power of the fourth chakra is the power of self-responsibility. We're also beginning to develop our ability to communicate. We've been doing that all along, but the power of the fifth chakra or fifth center is a power in which I can communicate my reality, not just repeat someone else's reality. Okay? And so it's possible that people, even in a very early stage of development, are already developing some of the powers of the higher centers from a very young age. Certainly we're experience in ourselves is awake and free at certain moments long before that's our habitual place of rest. We can all experience the detached awareness of the sixth chakra. We can all experience the ability to communicate our own reality. But by and large, as we said, as we grow through the years, one of these motives predominates. And usually, the growth process is a movement from security through the development of our emotional experience, pleasure, sexual identity, to self-determination and personal power, to self-responsibility, to self-communication, and then beyond the mental ego, to the human spiritual experience of the true self. All right. We'll come back to that shortly. So remember, that was one way of talking about the chakras. Keep that on the back burner for now. As a developmental process in which we're attuned to how the different motives of consciousness change through the years. This 8.5 by 14 sheet has that spelled out in great detail. It's an attempt to relate many different kinds of things to the developing powers of the chakras. And you'll notice somewhere in the bottom half of that page, there's developmental associations. Piaget's theories, Erickson, Kohlberg, Levinger, Fowler, Maslow, and how these different theories seem to more or less follow what the chakra system is from a very different direction proposing to us about human development. So when Maslow's hierarchy of needs talks about the physical and the security level as very basic, that's a first chakra issue. Then we go on to belonging, that's an emotional issue, that's a second chakra. And self-esteem, it's a third one, and so forth. You're going up the ladder here. I am certainly not willing to die for this sheet of paper at this point. This, as I said, is a rough attempt. It works out pretty good. And it's just amazing how these different developmentalists studying human nature from very different directions and with very different concerns end up showing a common trajectory every time. A movement from fear and trust-related issues, whether it be in ego development, faith development, moral development, and so forth, up to a kind of a free human being who is not in any way chained to the culture, not even in any way boxed in by a paradigm of any kind. They're very free of all of that, kind of a universal level of consciousness that they've awakened to. So that's a common trajectory. You'll see here that almost none of them have said anything about the consciousness of the seventh chakra. Now, perhaps we'll do some of that today. And I'll be coming back to that sheet again as we go along. Now, what do these body-mind centers tell us about human beings, how human beings are put together? This was another way that people talk about the chakras. Remember, as an occult system, a metaphysical anatomy, a metaphysical physiology, that's all that comes out of that, and I think it's related. These things are all related, but I'm talking about them separately. This is where it starts to get fun. Okay. Now here, the New Age people and the Hindus have done a lot more thinking about this issue than we have in traditional Catholic spirituality. Although, I hope to call attention to a few echoes in our tradition of some of these insights. The understanding here is of human beings as multiple interpenetrating bodies. So that as you move from the lower chakras to the higher, you're talking about, as we've already said, developing our physical powers, then our emotional intelligence, and our mental intelligence, and finally, taking full ownership of our spiritual intelligence. We can all observe that developmental trajectory in our own lives. What they have done that we haven't done too much of is they have dealt with the question, what does this tell us about how we're put together, about our nature? Okay? And so this is what they've come up with, this idea of these various bodies. Let's see if I can find my handout on that. I can't. It must be here. No, it's here. The understanding is of a human being as having multiple bodies. If for body you prefer the word dimension or level, well, that's okay, but they use the word bodies. The first level, of course, the physical, we're all familiar with, the physical body and what it is the body that we get around with in everyday life, the body that medical science knows about so well, the body that has a circulatory system and skeletal system and endocrine system and all those systems that you learned about in high school biology. And so there's not much of a need to go into what we mean by that, is there? We know what we mean by a physical body. Their understanding of the physical body and its powers roughly corresponds to the Christian idea of the body as sarx, or soma. Okay, so that's one kind of body that is spoken of in Christianity. Now, this next body, the etheric body, is a body that is very similar to the physical, but different in many ways. When they speak of the etheric body and the physical body and these others to come, they speak about them as interpenetrating. This means that the etheric lives within the physical. Let's say the physical body has a big energetic wave that goes like that. The etheric would have an energetic wave that fits inside of the physical. So I don't mean that it's like these little dolls you buy where one is inside the other and you know, you keep pulling them out and finally there's a little bitty teeny one in the middle and that's your spiritual self. I mean that these are all equally, they're all connected. It's not that one is bigger than the other one or smaller than the other one. Interpenetrating. A word in our tradition that means something similar is, I think co-inherence or something like that is a theological concept that speaks how things are inside of each other. How the body is in the soul and the soul is in the body, how God is in the soul and the soul is in God and things like that, co-inherence. The etheric body is a body which looks quite similar to the physical body over which it is superimposed. And their understanding of the etheric body is that it carries the map or the template which guides the development of the physical body. That the genes carry a developmental information, but the major roadmap for human development is carried by the etheric body. It is a form of matter and energy. The matter of which it is composed is called etheric matter or subtle matter. The etheric body is not completely separated from the physical. It interpenetrates it. So how do we experience that? Well, here's one way he talks about it in this book, Vibrational Medicine, by Dr. Richard Gerber. This ancient Chinese theory has it that the acupuncture points on the human body are points along an unseen meridian system that runs deeply throughout the tissues of the body. Through these meridians passes an invisible nutritive energy known in Chinese as the qi energy. The qi energy enters the body through the acupuncture points and flows to the deeper organ structures, bringing life-giving nutriment and subtle energetic nature. This meridian system could very well be the energy system of the etheric body. Okay, that's what Dr. Gerber is proposing here. And so through these meridians flows a kind of an energy that is interacting with and giving, nourishing the physical energy of the body, and is in turn being affected by that. Now, with the awakening of Kundalini, one of the things that happens is you begin to experience very acutely these kinds of energies, this qi energy flow that is flowing through the body. There's no doubt anymore that acupuncture is an effective kind of therapy in some circumstances. It has received considerable acceptance into Western medicine in the last 20 years. It's been being used sometimes as an anesthetic, sometimes in the treatment of certain pains, such as headaches and so forth. What Western science has never been able to understand is why does it work? And so here we're coming to an understanding of well, why it works is because these energies that are flowing through these little channels in this etheric body are affecting the physical body. But it has its own anatomy, it has its own physiology that isn't necessarily parallel to the physiology of the physical body. So while on a physical level it might not make sense that sticking a needle in my finger stops a toothache, it might make perfect sense in the anatomy of the etheric body that those two energies are connected in some way. Okay. Let's see if there's anything else we want to say about that. The meridian system of acupuncture forms an interface between the etheric and the physical body. And let's see. Right. Okay. So we have this etheric body. Sometimes when people die, you're able to see that etheric body leaving. The understanding that they have of that this etheric body does not move into the next life, but breaks up just as the physical body does. The various energies that it carries are subtle energies. That is to say, they're energies that can't be measured at this time with scientific equipment. But nonetheless, they're created energies that don't belong necessarily to the spiritual dimension of our being. Okay? So a ghost, for example, would be seeing a person in an etheric kind of manifestation. Well, if you haven't been blown away so far, let's go into the next one, which is the astral level. By the way, there's an echo of this etheric body in our tradition. And in speaking of the human soul, in classical theology, classical scholastic theology, by the way, is probably our the highest expression of our own Catholic metaphysics. And it's fallen into some disrepute since Vatican II, but I think Thomas Aquinas knew about all this stuff quite well and talked about it with great clarity. So when he talks about the human soul as subsuming everything that is inferior to it in the whole universe, the physical, the vegetable, the animal, are all subsumed into the human spiritual, he's saying something that can be related to that. So that they talked about the human soul as being a spiritual soul, and yet it also has it incorporates the animal soul and the vegetable soul. Well, what is a vegetable soul? Do people have a vegetable soul? Have you ever gone outside and felt like a plant? No. What is a vegetable soul is really something very much like this etheric body. It's a soul, a life-giving principle that makes you live. We even use that to say about a human being who's had a terrible brain tumor and we're keeping them, and they're just alive, that they're a vegetable. What does that mean? It means they're just alive. And that's what an etheric body gives you, is the ability to be alive. It's what makes a physical body not just a corpse, but a living body. It carries a life-giving breath, as it were. This chi energy is probably similar to the Jewish idea of ruah, a life-giving breath that flows through a human being. And when you don't have that breath anymore, you're dead. Okay? So to simply be able to live. Now, we're not vegetables, we're more than that. We have intentionality or desire, and that's what this astral body carries. Astral body is the seat of emotion and desire. It's sometimes called the desire body, and this would correspond to the old Thomistic idea of an animal soul. Animals are not vegetables. They have desire and instinct. They have an intentionality to survive and reproduce as animals. Largely, the desires of aggression and sexual reproduction are carried in this astral level here. Their understanding is that the astral body has its own energy system, which is not the same as the etheric. And this energy, as we said, is concerned with desire and heavy emotion. Astral energy flows through the astral body. Or you might say emotional energy would be another way to understand this. The anatomy and physiology of this astral body is also different from the human physical body, and different perhaps as well from the etheric body, so that it flows between them. It interpenetrates them. Because astral matter and energy exists in a frequency band well above etheric and physical, it is able to occupy the same space as the physical and etheric. This coexistence exhibits a principle of matter which might be called the principle of non-destructive coexistence. This principle states that energies of different frequencies can occupy the same space at the same time non-destructively. Okay. The esoteric literature describes the astral body as the seat of our sensual appetites and desires, longings, moods, feelings, and fears. All right, so that again is similar to the Thomistic idea of a via animalis, of an animal life, right, that we have. Human beings are not just animals or vegetables. We're more than that, but we have that. We come from that. Going up the scale, we come to the mental body. And here we begin to get into the spiritual nature of the human person. Human beings, of course, are not just instinctive living creatures. The ability to think and to speak are very highly developed in human beings. They may be developed in other animals, but to a very lesser extent. In us as well, the ability to think and to speak directs our desires. Just as the astral body is sometimes the vehicle of expression of human emotions, so the mental body is the vehicle through which the higher self manifests and expresses through the concrete intellect. If the mental body, or the mental self, you would say, is functioning properly, it allows an individual to think clearly and to focus his or her mental energies in appropriate directions with force, vigor, and clarity. Because the mental energy body feeds into the astral, which then funnels down into the etheric and physical bodies, healing a person at the mental level is stronger and produces longer lasting results than healing from either the astral or etheric. We're going to talk in a few minutes about how these interrelate. Whereas the mental body is more concerned with the creation and transmission of concrete thoughts and ideas to the brain, the causal body, which is the next one they speak of, is involved in the area of abstract ideas and concepts. This idea of theirs of a causal body, there you'll be different descriptions of this causal body in the occult literature. The causal body is here talked about and in many other places as the source of high abstract intelligence. So they'd make a distinction, as St. Thomas and many other philosophers did, between a kind of thinking that is focused on objects that you find in nature. Objects is a sensory oriented kind of mental intelligence. And then they would demonstrate how there's a higher mental intelligence that organizes these things into concepts and is able to observe principles implicit in the interaction of things. And that's where they began, you know, Plato and others to say, hey, this is not, this particular thing is no longer rooted in matter. This abstracting part of our nature that can observe principles of operation and create philosophies from them is of a higher nature. And since it's not in any way rooted in matter, it must be spiritual. We began to talk about a spiritual part of our nature. Causal consciousness deals with the essence of a subject, while the mental level studies the subject's details. Okay? The lower mental body dwells upon mental images obtained from sensations and analytically reasons about purely concrete objects. The causal body deals with the essence of substance and the true causes behind the illusion of appearances. On this plane, we no longer deal with emotions, ideas, or conceptions, but with the essence and underlying nature of the thing in question. All right. Well, does that sound like the human soul as a rational soul? In the true sense of reason, not just being sensory thinking, but abstract. But I think you, again, have an echo of this in our tradition, but it was never really developed as much as in this Hindu tradition here. What the chakras are then the means by which these different levels communicate with each other, where the energy of the higher spiritual can in some way communicate ultimately with the body, where the energy in the mental and the causal bodies can affect the astral and the etheric and ultimately the physical, and where the physical ultimately goes up and affects the mental. Each one of these levels has its own physiology and its own intra-communication systems. And the chakras are energy transmissions places where they can communicate back and forth to one another. And so again, when you go back to those experiences we were talking about earlier, a little child has lost its mother. That's a perception we have. And then there's a value that is touched off for us. And so all of that ends up producing an effect in the body. That thought and that value ultimately are felt in a body center, in the heart, okay? The chakras are the means by which thoughts and feelings communicate, where the energy of thought affects the energy of feeling which affects the basic life energy that flows through us. Now, there's some profound implications of this for human development and holistic health. In fact, this is the most holistic way of talking about a human being that I've yet come upon. You go back to that yellow sheet of paper and look on the back, there's something called Dynamics of Intrapersonal Growth and Transformation. Here's the first principle. Human development moves from the lower to the higher levels when the lessons of the lower levels have been sufficiently learned. So our physical body has to be developed enough, our emotional body has to be developed enough before our motive of consciousness or our ego can move beyond those concerns into the realm of the mental. You can't skip stages either. That's what this is saying. The way this is supposed to go is you're supposed to do your work where you are. And when you have matured enough, something begins to open. Sometimes people want to get into advanced spiritual consciousness because they don't like where they are at this time in life, and they want to use spiritual discipline as a drug to get out of that. And they don't want to deal with the marriage or the job or the problem, kids and so forth. They want to escape through meditation and be enlightened and cosmically conscious and all of that. And the Lord would say to those people, leave your gift at the altar, Jack, and go back to your family and do your work and to be reconciled. In growth, principle number two, the lower levels are never lost but come into alignment under the direction of a higher level. So we're moving from the physical kind of an ego through an emotional kind of an ego to a mental kind of an ego, but you don't lose your body and you don't lose your emotion. They come into the direction of the higher. So bodily activity is influenced by emotion. Thoughtful decisions can direct emotional expression. So as we grow, our emotional life ought to come under the influence of reason. Now here's the holistic implications. Dysfunction at a higher level brings consequences to the lower level. So if I have some dysfunction in the mental level, as for example, a low self-image, a self-image or self-concept is a mental body kind of self-experience. It's the self-experience of the mental body is the self-image. At the mental level, the self we experience is self-concept or self-image. If that is negative, then that will be crimping in some way the energies of the astral or emotional. It will be constricting those energies, which will also be constricting the energies of the etheric, which will be producing consequences in the physical body. You got that? So that's what we would call a psychosomatic problem, right? A psychosomatic problem means the body is hurting because of some problem that's somewhere else. The real problem is not your ulcer. The real problem is your attitude. Well, we've always known that. This just gives us a way of understanding how that works. These energies are supposed to have a free interplay with each other. But when at one level there's a constriction or a block, then everything else underneath is affected by that. And that's what this is saying. So that perhaps, well, I don't think perhaps, I think most definitely, many cancers, for example, could be caused by this. Heart disease, migraine headaches. And some of these have a very strong genetic basis, but some of them are perhaps consequences of attitudinal problems and so forth. And finally, damage or turmoil in a lower level impedes realization of a higher level at that lower level. Okay, what does that mean? That means, let's say I grow up to a level of development where I'm operating out of a mental ego, and it's a pretty healthy mental ego, let's say that. And I have a car accident, and a large amount of my brain is affected by that and destroyed. Well, that doesn't mean that my development in the mental body is lost. It just means it can't be expressed anymore in the physical body because the physical body is not healthy. That's all that means. It doesn't mean that it's lost in eternity, though. Because when I die, I have that level of development there, unobstructed by the physical body. You get that? So that I had, for example, a first cousin who is a very beautiful man, healthy, loving father and husband, and good friend, and he had a stroke. And it left a clot in his brain, and he functioned at the level of via vegetalis for a year before he died. Hardly, you know, even any emotional response. He was just there. And sometimes there was a flicker of recognition. Nevertheless, we had to believe that he was still there in some way. He just could not manifest. And so who knows what he was understanding all through those experiences. You just don't know. Sometimes people who have been in catatonic trances for years and years will wake up and describe all kinds of things that had been happening around them and want to go to this nurse and say, I resent the way you talked about me to that person, at blah, 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 blah. At that mental level, they were still hearing something, mental level to mental level, okay? So the telepathy is the ability of these two bodies to communicate without going through the medium of the physical. You got that? So it's mental to mental. They were still awake on that level, but they could not express in the physical. That's what that means. So a healthy body then allows us to express the higher levels in the body. That's a holistic implication for keeping the body healthy. This is certainly how the Hindus would see this. If you're going to live in the body and you want to experience the spirit, you need a healthy body. So your diet needs to be good, your exercise needs to be good, and so forth. And to that we would add, as a Judeo-Christian person in that tradition, because that physical body is also a very sacred body, it is the means by which your soul is growing in this life. It is the physical expression of your soul. Now, this little quick run through this metaphysical kind of framework tells us several things. It tells us how the different levels of our human nature interact, and it begins to point out the significance of these chakras. These chakras as the centers which are relay stations between these different bodies that transmute, as it were, mental energy into emotional energy into physical energy, all right? That's happening in these chakras. It's changing these energies. It's connecting them with each other. It's relaying them. And you can also see how this idea we talked about earlier of the chakras as a developmental system comes into play here too. We do develop the physical and then the emotional and the mental in our journey toward a full-blown experience of the spiritual. Now let's talk about this in terms of our body centers again. The chakra concerned with the development of the physical body and its powers, that chakra is the base chakra, the root chakra, the first chakra or center. You can go back to that yellow page, or you can go to this beige sheet of paper here. Okay? And what is at the root of, what is this root chakra? Well, simply it is the base of the spinal cord. What's the base of the spinal cord? Well, it's the bottom of the central nervous system. The central nervous system is the system that coordinates the activities of the body, at least the voluntary activities of the body. The etheric body is related to the chakra that we call the second chakra, which is located in different places in the literature. I'm going to put this up here. This little page shows you one way of looking at the energy centers.